This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Media Splode, episode 9. I really wanna stop, but I just got the taste for it. I feel like I could fly with a boat on the moon. So honey, hold my hand, you like making me wait for it. I feel like I could die walking up to the room. Oh yeah, late night watching television. But how did we get in this position? It's way too soon.
Hello, welcome to iFanboy Media Splode, episode 9. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Hello.
And Ron Richards.
Hello, my friends.
And this is Media Splode, the show unlocked by our patrons over at patreon.com/ifanboy. It's the show where we talk about media other than comic books, which is what our regular show is about. We do that every month. And this is actually the last show of the year. It is November, but we are going to fold this show into our year-end all-media roundup, which is the show we've been doing every year since we started doing this podcast 15 years ago. And so it would make no sense to have two of the same show in the same month. So we're going to count that one towards this one.
Listen, just be thankful we showed up.
And who knows what's happened to us between now that we're recording this and the time that you're hearing us.
Right. Anything.
This could be an in memoriam deal.
So that's dark. And... we've been kicking off all these shows with talking about our quarantine streaming. We're actually going to skip that this time because we have a lot of show.
Because listen, I've just run out of things to watch. It's gotten so bad, by the way, that I know we're not talking about quarantine streaming, but I just wanted to let the both of you know that I watched Fargo season 3, episode 1.
Oh my God.
I haven't watched episode 2 yet.
The McGregor season?
It's the one that Josh has been yelling at me to watch.
Right, okay. It's got everyone you love in it. And yeah. I mean, Mary Elizabeth Winstead. It's just
all right. Settle down there. Settle down.
She's just delightful.
All right. So, yeah,
you can see why a man would leave his wife 20 years.
Oh, God. Wow. All right. Okay. Awkward.
He did it, not me.
I know I did it.
You're celebrating it. Instead of talking about what we're streaming, I'm going to read a quote from Josh. This came into our group Slack chat the other day, and Josh said, I still can't get past the fact that Netflix, Amazon, whatever movies just feel like high-end TV movies. And I wanted to explore that discussion amongst the three of us. Josh, why don't you elaborate?
I think it came about when you know, if you go to Netflix or whatever, you'll see, oh, their new movie has come out. I think I watched The Trial of Chicago 7.
Right.
And the whole time I'm going, this is an amazing cast. This would have been great in the theater. And Connor said, well, it was supposed to be a theater movie. And I was like, yeah, but now that it's not, it feels like a TV movie. And I find that in general, this direct-to-streaming thing takes the to use Ron's word, pageantry out of it. They all feel like TV movies. And we are getting those sort of mid-level dramas that you don't get in the theater anymore. But there is some of the pizzazz that has been lost from the experience, I think. And I can't think of any of these... You know, there's a lot of really sort of big-name movies. Like you have David Fincher is coming out with a movie, Mank. You know, Mank. But it's going straight to Netflix. And this is outside of the idea that, like, we can't go to movie theaters right now, which is a thing that I respect. And in a little bit, you know, who knows, will have changed by the time you hear this. But, you know, Wonder Woman 84 is like, it's going to come out in theaters in December. And I was like, that seems optimistic.
Well, but it's also going to be streaming because I feel like they're hedging their bets. But yeah,
but I know. But even so, like, just the option, like, no one should be doing that. Anyway, but the point is, like, so when you guys see, you know, like, because there are now big name actors, big name directors, they're putting movies out that are just going direct to streaming, even if they are in theater the same day. Does that take anything away from you?
I guess, well, let me ask you a question first. How is it different than a movie that, you know, was in theaters and you watch it later on Blu-ray, or you watch it on HBO? Or is it just that because, you know, it was never in theaters? Is that what makes it so? I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just trying to figure out where
possibly
you're coming from.
To a certain extent. I mean, the other thing is, there's at least usually before a movie comes out that you want to see, there's some anticipation. Mm-hmm. So you've seen a trailer, and you think, oh, I got to catch that. And then if you miss it, you're like, all right, I got to catch that when it comes. Like, there's something to it. And instead, now it's just like one day it drops a movie and you're like, oh, there's a new David Fincher movie here that I never thought about or knew anything about. And also that I'm going to forget about completely. Like, that's the other part of it. Because of all the glut of all the streaming stuff, like, very little sticks with you.
So for you psychologically, the fact that it's tied into the larger streaming ecosystem makes it less special.
I think it might. And just, you know, the experience of it.
I have two points or two things I want to explore with this. One is, how much of a factor is the technology/presentation aspect of it? You know, i.e. sitting on your couch, watching it on your anywhere from 30-inch to 80-inch TV at home.
It's 55. You know,
with
I believe Connor's is also 55.
Yes. I know, but some people are bigger. I'm talking generally.
I'm just maybe
having decent to good audio or not, versus going to the theater experience, the closed kind of theater. And then the sub bullet to that is what I talk about a lot, which is the distraction factor.
Yes.
And I think we talked about this. I can't remember if we talked about this on previous shows or just like
it's
in
all
life.
One show, Ron. But, it's whether or not people can hear it is another question.
I know. That's the problem.
Whether or not something is recording is irrelevant.
I have a hard time people saying how they prefer binging, they prefer watching movies at home and blah, 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 because, like, I enjoyed going to the theaters because it was a distraction-free zone.
Yeah, well, I don't mean to, like, point it out, but, like, you're a distracted dude. Yep. Like, so for me, I'm thinking, like, that experience is probably really special for you.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you in addition to being very busy, you're just very connected. So I could see the appeal of that.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. I mean, it's also why I love Disney World. It's an opportunity to just disconnect from the world, and for 2 hours, nobody, you know, like, I feel safe turning my phone off during the 2 hours to watch a movie. Whereas if I'm home, you know, family, kids, work.
Never give your kids your phone number.
Lose my number, kids.
Well, it's very easy for, you know, my phone to buzz in the middle of a movie and it's from my sister and have to pause the movie and go talk to her. And by the time I hang up, my wife is already ready for bed. And then, you know, then now that's it. You know, like, so whereas in a theater, this was the event that you were going to do. That's the differentiator for me. Yeah. Like, it's the experience, but I'm not weighing any quality differences between the movies that are debuting on streaming services versus in the theaters.
I don't think that it's a qualitative difference, although I think it leads to that perception, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's just where, maybe it's just like where the product comes from. Like, if you know,
it's a psychological trigger in his head. He's already thinking of it as not something that is theatrical. It's not cinematic. It's not on the silver screen anymore.
We can all agree, you know, the idea of the TV movie is lesser. And so, I don't know, I guess
the HBO movie.
Yeah. And they make, you know, they do great movies.
Yeah. But
for certain.
It's a different product. I remember watching.
Yes.
I remember watching, what was that tennis movie, the Billie Jean King?
Yes, the
War of the Sexes, Battle of the Sexes.
Yeah, I remember watching that and thinking, this feels like an HBO movie. And I couldn't, like, pinpoint it.
It wasn't a good movie.
No, but I just, there's something about it didn't feel theatrical.
Budget was just low enough.
Well, so here's a question. Did you guys see the Hugh Jackman Long Island school scandal movie?
Yes, it was great.
Yes.
Right. So was that not a theatrical movie to you?
TV movie.
It was an HBO film. It was a TV movie.
Right, but if that was running in the theaters and you saw it in the theaters, like, you're making a distinction between what is a TV movie and what is a theater movie. But Connor, did you see the Battle of the Sexes in the theater?
No.
I'm positing that the medium that you were watching the film under is influencing your opinion of it.
Well, yeah, that's what I asked Josh.
Yeah. I also think there is a qualitative difference in something that – is made for a large screen, which is the reason, for example, why Christopher Nolan, like, you want to see those movies in a theater. And I think the further that we get away from making movies for that experience, the more that those movies will objectively change because they're aiming for something different. You know, like, does a Transformers type movie play as well if it's not like an, you know, an oversized,
right, spectrum? Like, I'm not excited about seeing Wonder Woman 84 for the first time on my TV. I've got a really nice TV. Yeah. It's 4K. The picture's beautiful. I have good sound, not great sound, but I have good sound, better than your average sound. But I'm not excited to see it for the first time that way. I haven't seen Tenet. I haven't rented any of these big blockbuster films on VOD. I'm not excited about that. I don't know what to do about Wonder Woman because there's no guarantee that by the time this is all shakes out, there's a vaccine and everything can goes back to some semblance of normalcy, that it'll be in a theater. I can't imagine it will be in a year or year's time. So now I have to guess I have to watch it on TV, which is not exciting.
Wonder Woman 84 is an interesting one because I was very excited for that after seeing the trailer and the fantastic use of New Order.
Yep.
And now, given that it's an 80s movie and more likely to have more good music, like, I kind of want to see that in a theater environment with a good sound system.
Yep.
That's completely an assumption based off of the trailer. So who knows?
I will say, like, I put a lot of care into my sort of, I want to say, mid-level sound system. Sounds good. Movie music, like, in the theater, when it's, like, a really good, like, sound, nothing sounds as good as music, like, from that source. I always think of that, like, when, I'm trying to think. The only thing that's coming to mind is Almost Famous, but whatever, like, that music is put out there on, like, the highest resolution on their amazingly balanced speakers and everything. It's just not the same. Like, and also, my kids sleep at night, so if I want to watch a movie, I could crank it, but, you know, it would wake everybody up, so I can listen to it within reason. But again, it's just, you know, then you're halfway through it, and the dog walks up and just stares at me because she needs to go pee. I can stop at any time. You know what I mean? Like, you can't stop the movie.
Knowing you can stop,
theater.
It means you can stop. It means it will stop.
And you can look to the person next to you and go, what's that guy from? What was he in? Right. Well, let's look. It's driving us crazy. We got to look.
Yep.
All of that stuff mixed together, like, if you know it's come to your house, like, you never had a chance to see it like that. It's always going to be just sort of a really well-done TV show, which isn't to say that's bad. I'd say, you know, like, TV over the past 10, 15 years has made probably more impact on me than cinema has, you know, in terms of, like, experiences, but it's not the same.
It's a different level. For me, it's to talk in music parlance, you know, since we're going in that direction, mm-hmm. like I enjoy seeing bands live. I don't really enjoy that much watching live performances on TV. I'd rather listen to the album. You know what I mean? Like, it's that sort of thing. So, like, you know, a movie, like I'm glad I saw Lord of the Rings on the big screen. I'm glad I saw Star Wars in the big screen. I'm glad, like, I made an effort in my life to see the movies that I only saw on TV when they were in the theaters, to go see them in the theaters for that experience. I think that experience is so much of it. I don't agree with you guys with the TV movie versus movie. I really think it like, you could take that Bad Education Hugh Jackman movie from HBO and go see it in the theater and walk and be like, oh, that was a good movie because you saw it in that environment.
Yeah, you could. But at the same time, that's not it wasn't made for a big screen.
Yeah, they're shot differently. They just are. The directors don't shoot stuff for small screens the way they shoot for big screens. They're just
like, there are certain movies that you don't like, you think, oh, I need to see that in the theater. And then there's other ones that it doesn't, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, I'll just catch that at home sometime or whatever. Again, it doesn't mean they're good, but it's a different thing. But the thing is, the thing that you're not excited to see about in the theater, maybe this is it. You're less excited to see. There's a movie that you see a trailer for, you see this coming and you go, man, I want to see that in the theater. If it never goes to the theater or you never have a chance to see it, like, you don't get that excitement for it. Maybe that's part of what we're talking about. Me.
It's interesting. I mean, there's also another aspect of this, which I don't want to get into, but because it's all subjective, but I feel like a lot of these movies in which the streaming service, and it's mostly Netflix, says to big names, filmmakers, you know, you've got carte blanche to do what you want. I feel like some of these movies could use another pass on the script or use a few studio notes.
I love that Connor is advocating for more studio notes.
Because it's not always the bad thing.
I know. All right, actually, Robert, I understand.
All right, Robert Evans.
A friend of ours who works at a streaming service is a big cinephile. He's always complaining that the straight-to-streaming movies that big filmmakers make, for the most part, not like Roma, but they're not fully baked sometimes.
Well, I mean, there's not, in a way, there's not as much risk. like, first of all, they don't promote them the way that a movie studio promotes them. So there isn't, you know, all of that extra stuff running on them. They're not making prints and sending them out to a bunch of theater. Like, there's just more riding on the other thing. Mm-hmm. And so you're more careful about it. And that can go either way. There's you know, every DC superhero movie, you know.
Yeah, I'm not saying every studio knows right, great. No, but I'm saying I just feel like some of these are just, you know.
But also just the idea that, like, every day I can go and I can turn on Netflix and there are, since the night before that I went to bed, there are 87 more things to watch that weren't there the day before. And mashed in there is some movie that I might have been really excited about to see in the theater if I'd seen a trailer and knew it was coming. But now it's just like, oh, there's a new episode of The Queen's Gambit on The Crown was there. And, oh, you know, so-and-so did a movie. And it just, like, it's just all a glut.
That's my biggest concern, was at least when with the theatrical system was in place and not falling apart, it was kind, you know, every Friday's new releases. I can look to see what is coming out today, even on the streaming services. Now, I see, you know, Connor, you know, for those of you at home, it is just a steady stream of links from Connor on a daily basis, which I love and I value so much. But he, you know, I get so many trailers thrown in my face by Connor TV, and now I'm like, oh, did that come out? Did I miss it? Where do I watch it? Like, it doesn't, like, well, I can't watch it when I'm missing things sometimes.
And then I just, it's gone. Yeah. Like, oh, I can't watch this right now. I'm in a meeting, and then
I send them as fleets.
Is that on fleet?
I don't know what a fleet is.
I think you do.
I feel like, Josh, this is a great segue into your next segment, because there is a lot out there, a lot of content, and there's a lot of streaming services.
So now we can all grouch about this as much as possible or whatever, but the fact is the main conduit for us. Connor, how much broadcast is still left in your life?
80%.
Yeah,
I think 90%.
Let's pretend that's not true, though. You know, for myself, I know for Ron, for a lot of people, pretty much the streaming services are the way that stuff comes in, and the way that you pretty, you know, because we don't have movies anymore, we can't go to shows, we can't do whatever. It's kind of that. You're not going down to the Blockbuster. So I started thinking, what? Okay, I started with this. If you could only have one streaming service as your thing to watch, like you have an Apple TV or an Android TV, and it is blank, and you can only put one streaming service.
Wow.
Whoa, we went from 5 to 1.
I love this, by the way.
We're going to go 3 deep.
Thunderdome.
Yeah.
We're going to go 3 deep. So you're going to get your first one, we're going to go around, then you get your second one, we'll go around, and your third one. Okay?
I love this.
Interesting. So this is not the question I thought we were getting. So this is a totally different mindset.
Here we are.
Which I love. You got Connor on his heels. I love it. Josh, bravo. I am tipping my hat to you, sir.
No problem.
Can I go first?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
So you can only – okay, so just to give everyone context, when Josh aired this to everyone, I scoffed and I was like, I'm not sure there's a conversation here. You know, blah, blah, blah. We're going to have a lot of duplicates and all the stuff like that. And then I counted my streaming service apps.
Yeah.
And I have over 14 apps on my phone and my Android TV.
How many do you use, though?
I use a lot of them. I use many of them.
Can you name them all?
In musical form.
Yeah, in rhyme.
Netflix and Roku and Hulu and...
Do it like Hamilton.
If I had to pick one...
Yeah.
Right now, it would be Disney Plus.
I knew you were going to say that.
Who was surprised?
But here's the thing. Because I'm on a steady 12-hour rotation of Olaf's Frozen Adventure, which is a 22-minute animated short about Olaf trying to find traditions at Christmas for Anna and Elsa, because my kids will kill me if I turn it off. So
I wonder if for the purposes of this exercise, if that we should make this be
about ourselves,
what it is you would like to watch. Because I know what you're saying.
Like, you're just in a vacuum.
Okay, so if I'm doing it just me in a vacuum, I would probably still go Disney Plus, because since it's come out, there has been regularly something that I've been watching week in, week out, new episode coming out that has had me, as well as a great library and catalog of stuff to watch. Like, there's always something to put on for me and the kids. So I would say that.
Wait. What's okay? Like, I know everybody's watching The Mandalorian, and it's you know if that's all you're, first of all, Disney Plus is not on my list. If it was, I would get it 1 month a year and watch the couple of shows that I watch, and then come back later. That's the thing I would do. So, what series are you watching with regularity that there's always something?
Well, right now I'm watching both Mando and The Right Stuff.
As am I. I think Right Stuff is great.
For the past couple of weeks, I've been enjoying National Geographic's Magic of Disney's Animal Kingdom, which is focusing on all the animals in Animal Kingdom. A movie that was produced by our good friend Ben Simpson came out called Clouds that is supposed to be very good that I haven't watched yet.
It's a TV movie.
No, it's a movie. It was a movie.
Sure it is.
Don't get into that.
Who's in first?
All the Marvel movies are there. So that
you, wait, you work at Marvel.
Many of the Marvel movies.
You work at Marvel and you think, I'm going to go home and wind down. It's time for Iron Man 2.
No, no.
Because... that's what you're saying. I'm just
no, I'm not saying that. But I'm trying to pull up. No,
I don't want you to sell it to me. I want to know why you like it.
Because
you're selling it to me.
Because honestly, there is all the stuff on there that is like from a regular basis in the year since it's been out. I've probably opened it up and watched something on it myself at least one or two times a week. Right, which given the low amount of TV that I am watching these days, the way I'm looking at this is based off use.
So when you go back, because you've been saying, like, I don't have anything to watch because there's so much of stuff, but nothing, just, like, is that where you would go to just, like, kick something off?
I was watching Prop Culture. I was watching The Imagineering Story. I was watching, you know, like...
really like Disney.
Well, yes. What's wrong
not
with that?
Fair. It's just
they put up a whole bunch of I'm trying to pull up my watch list. Where is it? They put up a whole bunch of archival, like there's the pre-opening report from Disneyland, 1955 TV special, an hour special of Walt Disney telling people what Disneyland is going to be. A whole bunch of documentaries. Is the documentary about the Sherman Brothers and Frank and Ollie, and they just came out with Glenn Cole Howard.
I get the thing.
There was a fun reality show or whatever competition show called Be Our Chef, where families went to the Walt Disney World and were cooking against each other.
You're saying is, and I want to just confirm this, is that if you could have one streaming service like for a year, that's what you would go with. Just an all Disney smorgasbord of like at the end, you would know everything about the parks.
Right now, yeah, that's it.
Fair enough.
He already knows everything about the parks.
I know.
As part of this scenario, do I have other TV? Is this the only thing I have?
Let's just say it's just this. This is your source.
So this is all I have for entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
Then HBO Max.
Yeah.
That's easy.
That's a good pick.
That's my answer too. Yeah. That's kind of...
It's not a competition. That's HBO Max. You got great films. All the series are on there. You just watch Band of Brothers.
I mean, those are the best shows and have been
the best
for
shows.
About 20 years.
And a full slate of great films, and they've got the somewhat limited TCM section with classic films. They have the DC section. They have a bunch of different things going on. As maligned as it may be and as strange as their strategy for what they keep on there is what it is, it still has a really wide variety of shows on there that I want to watch, shows and films.
I had a friend of mine the other day say, I miss having HBO, but I'm not going to pay $15 for that. And I was like, you out of your mind? HBO is the only reason I've had cable at any point over the past 15 years so that I could have HBO. Like, those are consistently probably the best television series, I think. And then on top of that, you add, you know, if you really want like current and a backlog of movies, it's pretty good. TCM, to me, I switched from HBO Go to HBO Max and I got all that TCM stuff and I was like, this is great.
Didn't they force you to do that?
No, not quite yet. I hadn't gotten there. I had the most basic cable package. So I had like 10 stations and HBO, and then when basically like my bill went from like 85 to 114 because the 2 year period ended, I just stopped completely because I finally got my wife to realize we didn't need local news that she didn't watch.
It's funny though, because I haven't thought about it, but where it fits on my list, but like I did consider YouTube TV, which is a streaming service, but it's basically so I can record Jeopardy off the local Channel 7 channel station, and so I can watch Mets games and things like that. Like, it's basically cable, but without the cable box. And I'm discounting it because it's a DVR functionality, but it is linear TV. Like, there is stuff on demand, but like I can't watch something until it's been on already. Like, it's basically it's basically on demand DVR. So I
took
that
release date.
I took that off my options though, because I felt like when we talk about streaming service, it's more like on demand, watch whatever you want, whenever
the
you
library.
Want. Right? Yeah.
What is the cost structure on that?
It used to be great, and now it's awful.
I feel like it was really expensive.
Yeah, it is now. It is really expensive, and honestly, I really should get rid of it and not get it until the baseball starts up again. But the thing is, I like having. I should just get an HD antenna. I have a lot of infrastructure in my life I need to adjust.
You know what? I bought an HD antenna in New York when I was there, and it was beautiful.
They're glorious.
Well, it's the best signal.
It's $20
better than the cable.
It's $20 and it's glorious.
It's,
but anyway,
I try to do that when I move here. Pure unadulterated signal right into your TV.
Yeah, I tried to do that when I got here and it's too hilly, but New York City was beautiful.
Yeah. When it came out, it was like $30 a month and it was like, great, cool, much cheaper than cable. And then they've slowly made more and more deals and added more and more channels that I do not want. And
it just adds like cable.
And now I think it's like $68 a month or something like that. And it's like, it's bad. And, you know, and I wrote a very strongly worded tweet and I said, listen, YouTube/Google, like, you of all people, like, give me options. Let me choose, like, pick five channels and pay $5 or whatever it is. Like, where's the innovative approach to this? But it just shows the stranglehold that old media has on the distribution infrastructure. I keep saying infrastructure, on the distribution models of the world that still are there. Like, we still haven't completely broken down the Viacom channel lock that, oh, you want this channel? You need to get all 10 of these channels, and therefore we're going to charge you X. And it's like, God damn it.
But that said, booking of cable.
Yeah, and the thing is that, like, what's also interesting is that, like, I'm in a point now where the commercials are not in my life. I have no, you know, like, and so the ability to fast forward through commercials or watch through YouTube, where I get no I don't watch commercials on YouTube because I have YouTube Premium because it comes with YouTube TV. You know, we like to watch HDTV every once in a while. HGTV has a streaming app. I could download that and use it, but they have those forced in commercials you can't skip. So it's like you're paying no matter what.
Yeah, that's how the show gets made, Ron. Someone has to pay for it. Someone somewhere has to pay for the show.
No, and I'm not debating that. I'm all for it. Trust me. I mean, you guys both know how much, you know, of my income is driven by advertising, and like, it's important, but I don't want to watch it. So given an option where I would rather pay a little and not have have a commercial free experience, I'm happy to do that. That's my point.
When I moved from, I want to say it was $9 a month for Hulu to like $12 for commercial free or whatever it was, $5 or $6 more, I've never regretted that decision. Like, I can't even imagine going back to it. It'd be terrible, which is why I don't ever watch Peacock.
That said, I like Peacock, but even though there's nothing on it to watch, but I like the idea.
I like the idea of it too, but I don't even know how to integrate that. So there might be something great on there, but I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, well, that's going to be one of my later picks. So
should we
move on to round two? Or?
Yeah, let's move on to round two.
I'll be quick in round two.
Okay, why don't you go ahead? We'll do round robin for now.
HBO Max.
All right. And I believe we cover those reasons.
Yes, correct.
Fair enough. Connor?
CBS All Access.
It's a good one.
Soon
good
to pick. Be the Paramount Plus or whatever the fuck they're calling it.
What's funny is that I got Showtime, and with it, I got CBS.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Welcome to the club.
I know, but I haven't watched it because, again, I just wanted to watch some shows on Showtime. So it's there, but I can't. It's like I got Hulu, and I got ESPN with it. Or I got Disney Hulu with the ESPN. And I'm like, okay. I like those things, but I'm not going to watch it. Really? Okay. So anyway, go ahead. I didn't mean to.
No.
So
could
I count the Showtime CBS thing as a package? You could get that and then have them both.
Showtime doesn't have a standalone app. It just has Showtime Anywhere, which you get with other.
I got mine through Apple, and it was $10 a month, and I got Showtime and CBS. I didn't even know I got CBS. I just had it one day. I was like, where'd this come from? And I realized.
It's not like HBO Max's version of Showtime. It's the streaming network that you get for every channel has.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, basically, it's just for like three shows, but I love those shows.
It's Picard. Is The Good Fight still on?
The Good Fight, Picard, and I'll eventually get back to Discovery. I just haven't had time.
It's Discovery, Connor. Discovery.
I know. Everyone's telling me season three. I just need to get back.
It's really good. Yeah.
Really like those shows.
Well, I don't watch a lot of shows on streaming, so there's those. Right. Those are three that I watch.
And here's the thing about CBS All Access: it's a horrible name, and it's hard to get behind this.
It's going away.
And it's going away. It is. And by the way, that's why it's not on my list, because it's in transition. Is something that I do enjoy, but they do have quite, you know, they have a decent library.
Oh, they've got a great library.
And they've got all the old Star Trek stuff. They have that documentary, Console Wars, about Nintendo versus Sega. Like, they started to do some interesting stuff.
They have all of CBS's library, and they have Paramount's films. Like, it's not a nothing.
I had no idea that the guy from Silicon Valley was now in a CBS sitcom.
Yeah, it's one of those shows that is basically a movie pitch that they're somehow doing a TV show of. It's just stupid.
Middle Ditch?
Yeah.
Yeah, Middle Ditch.
I can't say I'm going to seek out stuff with him. Like, I can't think of it. Like, man, you know what? I want more of that
Josh,
guy from that show.
You're not your second choice?
Amazon Prime.
Okay.
Your sort of three original ones were your Netflix, your Amazon, and your Hulu.
Mm-hmm.
And based on those, the kinds of things that I've enjoyed the most, and also sort of the catalog that when I go through, I think, oh, that's stuff I want to watch, or whatever the shows that are on there. I think Amazon is the one that I go to the most. It's the one that I've been watching the most lately for whatever reason. Most of the shows I've been getting through there. And it's also not quite so much that I'm paralyzed. I find Netflix to be paralyzingly full. It's just...
No, it's overwhelming. Yeah,
it's
agreed.
It's way too much. You can't really make choices. I remember years ago coming up with my DVD queue, and it got kind of big, and I was like, this is funny. And then they moved to streaming, and it got ridiculous. And then one day, I just took everything out of it. I was like, this isn't helping me. It just makes me feel like I have homework that I'm never going to get to. So yeah, the other thing that Amazon has right now is they just have a shit ton of music docs, like older ones and sort of, and a bunch of punk rock docs, and just kind of an impressive amount. You know, but, you know, I've been watching The Americans for a while. They've had some good series. They had Mrs. Maisel. They've had Jack Ryan. They've had The Boys, some series I've really liked and enjoyed. So that's probably the one that I would keep. Plus, I don't even think about paying for it because I just got it for the shipping and that showed up.
That was my question originally. I thought it was going to be about what do we want to keep paying for, and so many of them are just like add-ons.
Well, you know, at this point though, like I would consider it as like I consider that part of the thing. Originally, I just kind of had it and I sort of took it for granted, but now it's probably the, you know.
I'm paying for Prime for the shipping.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, 100%.
The TV is like a nice bonus.
Yeah, agreed.
So third choice, Ron?
We're on third.
Third and final choice. These are only three you get.
Third and final choice. Totally free. Don't have to pay a cent for it. Pluto TV.
That's your third choice.
It's my third choice.
What is Pluto TV?
So Pluto TV is a fascinating collection of free content. Yes, there are some ads in there. You can't avoid all the ads. It is ad supported, but they have built together a shit ton of linear channels, and you can literally turn it on and find something to watch at any time of day. The reason I am watching it is because they've recently launched a dedicated channel to 24 hours of Beverly Hills 90210. But I had been watching it for years because they also have a channel that I used to get on my HD antenna in San Francisco that I adore called Buzzer, B-U-Z-Z-R, which airs old game shows from the 70s and 80s. And so at any time, I can pop on and watch a match game or anything like that.
So wait,
and always puts a smile on my face.
Is it not on demand? It's just, these are channels that run and you just sort of...
They are streaming channels that just run in a loop.
So it's like old TV, but you're just...
No, like literally, it looks like the guide from Comcast and you pick your show and it goes to that.
Yep, yes, exactly. And it's the model that... And I'm pretty sure NBC Universal either bought them or invested heavily in them, because when Peacock launched, a third of Peacock was the same thing, where like, here's just a channel of animals and here's a channel, whatever. And what's funny is that Pluto used to be, it was like a whole bunch of like public domain stuff and just like really obscure like grindhouse films and all this stuff. But as the years have gone on, they've added like MTV. There's actual music videos on this. They've added like channels you recognize, and it's totally free. It's totally free. And
it's not much in the way of commercials.
It's not much. And what's really funny and what baffles my wife is that they clearly don't have, I mean, you know, the media landscape as it is, there's a commercial break and you might see a commercial, but then you sit there for a minute with the Pluto TV standby. We'll be right back, because they haven't sold all the ad slots. Mm-hmm. And they don't have remnant inventory. Well,
I noticed that when I was watching like the debate stuff and the election stuff on Peacock. Like, they just kept having in-house ads. And I was like, they haven't sold anything for this.
Yeah, pretty much. Pluto TV is great. I've been using it for a couple of years since they had Buzzer. And then the addition of 90210 just knocked it out of the park for me. So there you go.
There it is.
Josh, your final choice.
Apple TV Plus.
No surprise there.
Not a ton of content, but really a good 3, 4, 5 shows that I have absolutely loved. The first thing that came out when they launched was For All Mankind, which was sort of fiction swerve on the space race. And I really dazed by the guys at Battlestar Galactica. Then we went into Mythic Quest and then Ted Lasso and Long Way Up. Like, it just, you know, some shows that they do on a weekly basis. So, you know, Friday, I got to wait for the new episode. I've just really enjoyed that. And it, for me, it was free, but if it's $5, I keep telling everybody when we're talking about Ted Lasso, but I'll tell people, like, just pay for it for 1 month for the $5 that you want. But in terms of like quality over quantity. I've really enjoyed that, probably the most out of all of them.
So, Ron, your three were Disney Plus and what and what?
HBO Max and Pluto.
And Josh, yours were HBO Max, Prime, and Apple TV Plus.
Mm-hmm.
Mine's HBO Max, CBS. I totally forgot about Apple TV Plus. I was going to go with another one, but I think I might have to go with Apple TV Plus. I was going to go with Prime, but...
Prime is a good choice, but Prime does, I mean, and we discounted the kids, and as I've mentioned, Amazon Prime is my source for Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. But Prime, like, I'm not inspired to go, hey, it's the same problem as Netflix, right? There's so much content there.
I don't think you're wrong about that, but there's, like, less stuff, so it's easier to run into stuff you like or know.
I'm never motivated to, let me open up Amazon and see what's on it. You know what I mean? At least, you know, like, I'm trying to think about, like, the pecking order of, like, not only what do I consume on the most, but what do I open the most, what do I use, and when I think, oh, I want to watch something, what do I open up?
Apparently it's Disney Plus.
It is, but rarely is it Amazon unless I'm pointedly going.
No, Amazon is like a specific thing.
Expanse, forgot about that.
Yeah,
Fleabag.
That's good, but that's recent. But that's recent. So
I know, but I'm saying, like, there's a lot of the shows on there are ones that I don't want to miss when they go forward.
I would noodle around in there more back before they took Ken Burns off and put it back on his own thing.
I'm also a PBS member, so
yeah, so am I.
Although they're not there. The other day, yeah. I was like, I want to watch baseball.
He's been quarantined off into his own one.
Yeah.
Not cool.
I would pay for that one.
PBS is one of my 14 apps.
Yes, it's mine too.
Hulu's on there. I mean, I have a lot of streaming apps.
I mean, like most of the others, like, I have a couple of things. Like, I feel like sometimes I have Hulu just for Fargo. And then Lindsay just watches This Is Us on there. And that's kind of what we use that for.
That's the one I watch by the least by far.
Yeah.
I only watch when something doesn't record on my DVR by accident, then I go watch on Hulu.
That's why I have Hulu, because I don't have cable, so I just can get that whatever I want there the next day or something like that.
Now we are at the end of November. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody in the United States. And we're heading into December for Christmas. We're not going to have a December show like we said at the top. Otherwise, we've had this discussion then, so we're going to have it now. Ron and I are huge fans of Christmas films. That's basically all I watch in December. So we thought we would talk about our favorites, what are our top five all time.
That makes the streaming question 1/12 easier.
It does, sure does. Before we get into this, I know there's the debate, and it's the tired trope now of, you know, like, is it a Christmas movie or not? Or how I like to say it is that, like, you've got movies that are about Christmas, or there are movies that take place during Christmas, right. And there's two very big distinctions. I wanted to posit and throw to you guys a third category. Not that we need to include it in this list, but just something to think about this year. There are movies that are about Christmas. There are movies that take place during Christmas. And then there are movies you watch at Christmas.
I'm going to go ahead and say, this is not my show, so whatever. I think that you should include whatever you consider to be a Christmas movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, make your own rules.
No, but that kind of dawned on me this year.
That's
but
that last one is.
Well, it's funny because that's what my wife said, and I said, hey, listen, Goodfellas has got a pretty impactful Christmas scene in it.
I'm not disagreeing. It's the first thing I thought of.
Listen, life is hard. Make your own
list. I would say life is hard. Goodfellas is as much of a Christmas movie as The Godfather.
Karen, I got the biggest tree they had.
Anyway, Connor, I would just like another point of clarification before we get into this.
Yeah.
Is this requirement to be a theatrical 90-minute plus film, or do you also include specials? Listen,
go nuts. It's okay, Christmas. Great. In the spirit of the holidays, there are no rules.
Let's imagine it's all one big wall of DVDs and you have to pick one out.
Got it. Five out of
these are your top five.
Okay.
Not the only five. This is not like the last question. This is your top favorite.
Okay. And are we doing 5 to 1 or 1 to 5?
Five to 1. More exciting that way.
Okay.
So should we knock Josh out of this first?
I don't.
You have no opinions? You're going to sit back and take a sip of water?
I can give you like a handful of them, but I don't care.
All right.
Go for it. What are your handful?
Let's
knock the guy out who doesn't care first.
Let's hear Josh's. All right, go for it.
Love Actually.
Mm-hmm.
National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Mm-hmm.
I have added this because of you guys. It's a Wonderful Life.
Mm-hmm.
That might be it.
So those are your top three?
Top three. Those are the ones I own a Christmas Story. I watch those fairly regularly each year.
All right. Ron, why don't you do your top five?
Okay, so from 5 to 1, I would have to say 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, I think it's called.
Mm-hmm. I could add Elf to just make it 5. So there.
Yes, 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, 1974, half-hour animated special.
About the mouse?
About a man and a mouse.
That was a great one.
Directed by Rankin and Bass, starring Joel Grey. And basically it's about a town where Santa isn't coming and a clockmaker tries to fix it. And the clockmaker has mice that live in his house. And turns out the son of the mouse wrote a letter to the paper about Santa. And so Santa decided not to come there. And so they have to fix it. And it's wonderful. And then it ends with the 'Twas the Night Before Christmas poem. And it's delightful. It's got a great song that just stays in your head all through the holiday.
I love that movie. Or whatever the special. I love that special.
Yeah. It's great. It's a great special. 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. Love it.
It's that classic that classic period animation from that time.
Yeah.
It has such a specific feeling to it.
Yeah. You see, this is a tough topic because Josh rattled off a bunch of my favorite films. They don't even make my top 5. Like, I could get them in the top 10, maybe. So number 4 would be, which I know is going to be on Connor's list, Scrooged.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, classic Bill Murray.
I assume that's Connor's number 2.
We'll find.
I'm just putting it there.
Listen,
I'm not telling you. I'm just putting that there now. We get to it later.
Yeah. Number 3 is, you know, and thanks to PBS for saving the day for everybody. But Charlie Brown Christmas,
mm-hmm.
Classic, must have. You know.
Okay.
You know,
Apple made that possible. Just saying.
Well, yeah, because they got themselves in hot water once already. So. Fucking Apple.
It's a PR mess they had to fix.
It's just a bad mess. And I will give them, I will tip the hat, though. The going to PBS was the bet was like, well done.
Baller move.
Yeah, it was. It really was. So Charlie Brown Christmas, you all know it. You all love it. That's fine. Number 2 is Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Also Rankin-Bass, stop motion animation. Fantastic. And then number 1 is no surprise. It's a Wonderful Life, the greatest Christmas film of all time.
So... mine is all actual theatrical films.
Of course.
I could throw a lot of specials there, but it, you know, the thing is I have...
Well, these are the things I must watch at the holidays, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
It was actually really hard to make this list. I had a really hard time with it. I struggled with it. I have a stack of Christmas DVDs that I plow through, and there's at least 10 or 15 or 12 in there. So you're not going to see A Christmas Story, even though I love that film. You're not going to see Elf. You're not going to see Miracle on 34th Street. You're not going to see White Christmas. Home Alone. I love all those movies. They're all in the stack. For number 5, you're going to see National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
I can't swim, Connor.
I know, Josh. I saw it in the theaters when it came out. I love it now just as much as I did then. It's the last hurrah for that family, even though they made more films. It's the last, like, good vacation film. And it's terrific. Everyone in that movie is great. Mm-hmm. My list is actually very similar to Josh's. Number 4 is Love Actually. I love Love Actually. It captures the bittersweet nature of the holidays really well. It can be really fun and exciting and happy and love-filled. It can also be really sad and lonely. And it runs the gamut.
If it was just Bill Nighy in that, I might even put it on the list. I mean, the rest of it's fine and great or whatever, but, you know, it's very sweet.
For me, it's the most emotionally true because it allows for sadness into the holidays.
Yeah.
3 is Scrooged. Love Scrooged.
Josh was close. Josh was close.
I almost said 1, and then I thought, no, it's not going to be that.
And it was hard. Listen, the top 3 could all be number 1, and I really struggled with it. I was literally just talking about a scene from Scrooge the other day, and I started tearing up. I love that movie so much. And then number 2, this was hard. It's a Wonderful Life at number 2.
Oh, you son of a bitch.
It's hard because it's in my top 10 films of all time. It might be in the top 5 of all time. But on the Christmas list, which is a very different list, it's number 2. It's wonderful. It's beautiful. It warms your heart. It's a great performance from everybody in that movie. Number 1, it's very specific to me and my family. It's Holiday Inn. It's the Bing Crosby, Fred Astaire classic.
And what people don't realize is that the Kilpatrick family love a good blackface scene.
It has a blackface scene, and it's unfortunate. Actually, the first time I saw it, I remember seeing it was in a film class in junior high school, which led to the discussion about blackface history, blackface and all. And so it was actually a very good teachable moment. It's a movie we always watched as a kid. It introduced White Christmas to the world. It's terrific. Bing Crosby and Fred Astaire. I adore it. It finally came out on Blu-ray, by the way, a couple years ago, which was great. It's my favorite all-time Christmas movie, even if it's not in my top 10 all-time movies like It's a Wonderful Life is. It's just a very different...
Interesting.
It's a different thing, you know?
So how do you feel? I'm fascinated by the relationship between Holiday... I do enjoy Holiday Inn as well, although it's interesting because... that is a movie about all holidays, not just Christmas.
But
how do you feel about the relationship between that and White Christmas? Because it's fascinating because, like, the set is the same.
Oh, it's almost a remake. I mean, I like White Christmas quite a bit. It's on my list. It's one of the films I watch on my Blu-ray stack. The Arclight here in LA, you know, did Christmas movies, you know, during December, old ones, and you can go watch them. And I went to see About Christmas on the big screen. It was great, but it's basically a weird remake, not plot-wise, but thematically. And, you know, Bing Crosby's in his 50s. It's not quite as vibrant as a younger in his 40s or late 30s
Bing Crosby. I do love the general, though.
What do you do with the general? Yeah, it's the same set. I think it is the same set.
I don't know if it's the exact same set, but it is a very similar set as Holiday Inn. Like, it is of the inn, the two
inns. Sure, might be the same set.
Who's the other guy in White Christmas? I can't remember his name.
It's who's the other guy in White Christmas?
It's not Eddie Fisher.
Danny Kaye.
Danny Kaye, that's what it is. He's fantastic. He's delightful.
They wanted Fred Astaire to come out of retirement, which he was in the middle of one of his retirements. He obviously eventually came out of it. They wanted him to come out of retirement to do it. He said he's too old to do this. He was right. I think it was supposed to be Donald O'Connor.
Danny Kaye was great.
Vera Allen and Rosemary Clooney.
Yeah, I know I'm turning this in from Holiday Inn to being about White Christmas, but it has one of our favorite winter songs, Snow.
Snow.
Which is fantastic. I wash my hair in the snow. Just so the White Christmas is number 6 on my 6 to 10.
It's a great
list.
Film.
Can I do 6 to 10?
Sure.
White Christmas, National Lampoon Christmas Vacation, Elf, Nightmare Before Christmas, and then The Muppet Christmas Carol. Hmm. That's my 6 to 10.
That last Grinch movie that came out last year was pretty good. It's not on a list. I just was looking when I went through. And I know we talked about how we wouldn't judge, but I was looking at a lot of lists as we were talking about this. And I saw Planes, Trains, and Automobiles in a lot of Christmas lists.
It's a Thanksgiving movie.
And I say, yeah. I was like, no, we're not buying that.
Trying to get over Thanksgiving.
That's ridiculous. That's a Thanksgiving movie.
Well, that's like the argument about Nightmare Before Christmas is that, is it a Halloween movie or a Christmas movie? And I argue it's a Christmas movie with Halloween themes or Halloween tone, but it's still a Christmas movie, firmly planted in Christmas.
Yeah. Gremlins.
And that's the thing. And like, and I know we said don't do it or whatever, but like, I just, you know, like I, you know, yes, you know, Lethal Weapon, Die Hard, all this sort of stuff. They're not Christmas movies. They take place during Christmas.
They aren't about the spirit of the holiday, which is what.
Now, I will say.
Are they things that you watch during that time, though?
No.
Because it gives you that feeling?
Nope.
So Gremlins would be like one like that?
Nope.
Well, no, I mean, I'm saying that's like those.
Yes, it could be. Yeah, Gremlins takes place during Christmas. It's not about
Iron Man 3 is not a Christmas movie. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang's not a Christmas movie.
I thought that you guys were being more open, and what you've done is you've shut the doors.
Yeah. We gave lip service to openness, and then we came in and shut it down.
I just want to make sure that I didn't miss that, because I was in a completely different place a few minutes ago, and now I feel attacked and threatened, and before I felt open.
I will say that, you loyal listeners out there, if you're looking for a new or something more recent Christmas adventure to go on, I would recommend on Netflix, what is it, The Santa Chronicles?
With Kurt Russell?
With Kurt Russell. Or The Christmas Chronicles, I think.
There's a sequel coming this year.
Is there a sequel coming this year?
Yeah, with Goldie Hawn with an expanded role.
The Christmas Chronicles, that was a surprisingly delightful film.
Well, Kurt Russell's always great.
Kurt Russell's great, and it was surprisingly fun. I enjoyed it. I mean, it's, you know, produced by Chris Columbus, right? So it's got a lot of that in its DNA. You know, it's barely an hour and a half. You know, take Josh, watch it with the boys. Like it's, you know, it's got a little bit of the, you know, despite it has Oliver Hudson, but we won't hold it against that.
If you're at home listening to this, by the way, I have no idea what he's talking about most of the time either.
It's a fun kind of kid based adventure romp around Santa Claus, which is just fun. So I recommend it. And now, Connor, I'm excited for the sequel, which I didn't know was happening.
I got the email from Netflix about it.
Oh, it comes out November 25th, 2020.
In fact, is it already out by the time the show is out? Yes.
I think it is, yeah. Hopefully next show I'll be... It's 10 minutes longer than the first movie, so that's a good sign.
All right, so those are our top 5 Christmas films. We're excited to get
into them. Oh my God, you know who's in the Christmas Chronicles too?
Who?
Darlene Love.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Nice. All right.
I'm totally watching this.
Let's open up the mailbag.
Oh, my favorite part.
We'll see how many we get to. Andrew B. writes and says, I'm kind of blending the main show and the Media Explode show here, but I've been thinking of this ever since vinyl became popular again. This is another vinyl email question. We really touched a nerve. Andrew says, you often qualify a crummy patron power by saying a power could be a blessing or a curse. So I'm wondering if the following is a blessing or a curse. I cannot hear the difference in quality between most pristine vinyl pressings and an MP3 file. I assume your inclination is to say this is a curse because you talk about audio quality a good bit, but consider that I am never displeased with the quality or supposed lack thereof when listening to music. It's not to say I'm immune to a crummy recording, but all things being equal on the recording side, I can listen to an MP3 playing through my normal TV speakers or phone speakers and be pleased as punch. That said, I totally endorse the vinyl hobby because a lot of them look dope as shit.
That's fair, and I'm probably more with him than I am with Josh.
Well, because you're deaf.
No, I'm not.
I don't mean deaf.
I think most people can't tell the difference.
Yeah.
I think that's true.
I think that the qualitative difference is probably minimal. And so the main benefit of records is certainly not that. Although.
Well, hold on. I think you're partially right. I think the difference comes in how you're listening to it. The quality of the speaker, all that stuff makes a difference.
It does. And which also goes back to the person, like just basically how much you have invested, not just time wise, but in giving a shit about the equipment that you're listening to stuff through. Like if you're the kind of person who listens to your TV through the stock speakers that it came with and you never really notice or care about the difference, then which is what this person sounds like, or, yeah, you know, just like $15 earbuds or, you know, the stock speakers that come in a car, you're like, I don't know, sounds fine to me. It's because you probably never thought, hey, how can this sound better? And then once you hear that, you go, oh, that's better. And so you sort of start chasing that. And that's not a judgment.
No, I think a lot of people just don't notice the difference.
Well, I will say, as somebody who, you know, like I have a hard time discerning, like you play me a lossless FLAC file of the same song as a betterly compressed MP3 file, like not like no low bit rate, you know, like a decent bit rate on the MP3 file. I have a hard time discerning the difference, you know, like, yeah, but, you know, I'm not that much of an audiophile on that side. That said, you put that same song and I put it on a record, even without our tube amp solutions that we have and things like that, even with a regular amplifier, it does feel warmer.
Yes, there's a deeper, warmer sound.
There's a different tone to it that I do notice is lost in a compressed MP3 file. So
I think there's that, but what I go for is two things, and I have a hard time narrowing down that warmer thing. I really do. I know what something sounds like when it sounds too digital and cold, and I guess it's the opposite of that, but I don't know, because that's such a subjective thing. What I listen for is two things that they kind of go together, is dynamics, meaning that you're hearing the highs and the lows, then the lows there, you know, like you can hear the bass. Like it's a lot of that is like, if you just listen to the radio, you really can't hear the bass. Right. Like I want to hear the bass as its own instrument. I want to hear, you know, the drums at their own instrument. I want to hear the individual, if there's two guitars, I want to hear the difference between them. And so there's the dynamics of where those sounds hit you, which is really the way that I have set up my record player and everything to, like, that's what I want to hear when I hear a good record. And then also the sound separation, they would call it. I think a lot of times when we listen to MP3s or even the CDs, you know, when we were growing up, the CDs were in the middle of what they called the loudness wars, and they were just pushing everything as high as possible so they sounded good on the radio, you know, to the point where sounds were almost distorting. You kind of can't really tell all the different parts that go into something. And I really like that. I think my favorite record at this point is In Rainbows by Radiohead. And one of the reasons is you've got a 5-piece band, so there are 3 guitars or maybe 2 guitars and the organ, and you can hear every single bit of it without it being muddied at all. And this is where I really ended up going down that rabbit hole, is that I've listened to the MP3 a lot. I tend to listen to it when I'm on planes for whatever reason. And I got home and I bought the record and I put it on and I was like, this actually sounds worse than the MP3, which is weird. And then so I bought like a European version, and all of a sudden it sounded like I wanted it to, which was, you know, you can hear all the little parts. And that's the thing that I love the most. And I think people don't care about that or know about it. Like I used to say forever, like, why would I put an amplifier in my car? I don't want it louder. And it's not that it's louder. It's that it's pushing a more pure signal to the speakers so they don't have to work as hard to get all the sounds out of it that are just there to begin with. And that clarity is really important to me.
I would take issue with the idea that most people don't. It's not a matter of they don't know and care. It's I think people just, there's different, people take different things from different entertainment value. The value you find in listening to all different instruments, most people may not care about that. They just want to hear the song.
No, and I don't mean care like it's a qual, like it's just not a factor that is important to them. And that's totally valid.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone comes out differently. But I do think that most people can't tell the difference.
Yes, no, I agree.
For various reasons, whether it's their ears or the equipment they're using, I think it's for most people.
Yeah. Let's do another question.
David Z. Is Donald Sutherland a G-dad?
Do we even have to keep talking?
Let's just finish his email. Let's respect his email.
I'll tell you right now, no, but finish his email.
I'm watching Ad Astra, and I've been thinking about this for 18 minutes and 23 seconds. He is the original Hawkeye Pierce, which alone should automatically qualify him for honorable mention.
Killing me.
It's awful. It's
did like he say how long he was thinking about it? Because he wasted time.
18 minutes, 23 seconds.
Didn't we raise you enough? I got it. What's this guy's name?
David Z.
David, I'm disappointed.
I got to say. And not just for me, but for the good people of the Great White North. You know, like, yes. I don't want to take anything from them. Exactly. I'm not going to walk around saying, oh, William Shatner should be on the list. What are we doing here? Are we fucking around?
We talking about Martin Short? We're not talking about Martin Short.
I'm not here to talk about Michael J. Fox.
Come on.
Come on.
He's a jiddict.
He's a jiddict.
He's a goddamn Canadian treasure for sure.
And we agree with that. You say, eh?
We're not allowed to. We can't speak for Canada, though.
No.
True.
Who understands their accents?
That's up to them. Right. And may I say that if we gave off that impression that we speak for you, I am genuinely sorry.
Connor, I feel like if we ever did that podcast we talked about, we could do a season on Donald Sutherland.
I think, yes.
I would gladly invest in that. He's every time I see him, he is delightful.
What's odd to me, though, is that the example was Ad Astra and not a great movie.
I didn't even know he was in it. I have that movie. I never watched it.
No, I mean, I saw it, but the fact that you made it 18 minutes into that movie, I mean, I watched it, but it was torture. And I like everything about that movie in concept.
The last question requires you guys to watch a video. So what we're going to do is read the email, break for you to watch the quick video, and then come back to discuss.
I love this so much. This is the greatest night of my life.
It's a 4-hour video. Get ready.
Awesome. it's a YouTube video from the Q people.
Gavin Tia. Gavin T writes and says, this has nothing to do with comics, but I've been thinking of this question since the recent Media Split episode where you listed your favorite Tom Hanks movies. Then I really started thinking about it 2 weeks ago when you discussed Taylor Swift. This email came in a while ago. Anyways, I'd love to hear your thoughts on Tom Hanks' appearance in Carly Rae Jepsen's video, I Really Like You.
All right, so we go watch it now?
So we're going to pause and come right back. So there's a lot here.
Is there?
Can I jump out with this?
Sure.
I did not know this existed until this very moment. And let me tell you, I'm all in.
I have three main thoughts. One, okay. Tom Hanks looks fucking terrific.
He looks terrific. It's important to know too that this is 5 years old, but he still looks great. He would still look great if it was filmed today.
Yeah.
I love that he did this.
Yes, I do.
I love that it all takes place in New York, and it was like that's the great nice to see, like in the cold, which is awesome. And two, I love that he didn't really try to lip sync very hard.
Well, that's the thing. We found the one thing he's not good at. It's lip syncing, apparently, because he's really bad at it in this movie.
Well,
this
I think
video.
There's the choice there is it's not like he probably knew the song by heart. he had the choice to make, like, do I go for it and act like I'm a pop singer or do I just do it straight? And he went with straight, which is the right choice.
Yep.
By the way, if you're out there listening, we're going to have this video embedded in our show notes. So if you haven't seen this video and you want to know what we're talking about.
Did you introduce it? I don't believe you did before.
I did. Carly Rae Jepsen's I Really Like You video. It's going to be in the show notes. I just think he's up for it, which is great about the good thing about Tom Hanks.
Exactly. He's up for it. And also what I think is also is that he's not precious. There's not only one, but multiple Forrest Gump references throughout this, which, you know, like, which I could see, you know, 25 years later going, do we really need both these jokes? But he's like, yeah, let's do it. I'll hit the ping pong ball. Like,
the question is, why did he do this?
Well, I can tell you why. I looked it up before the show.
I was going to say, like, I know, like, it's not like they met his quote. They didn't pay him 25 mil for this. So
it's the most expensive music video of all time, surpassing Thriller.
Yeah.
So as these things go in Hollywood, he was having dinner with her manager, who was a famous music manager, Scooter Braun. Scooter was telling him the pitch for this video they were going to shoot, and they were going to get some famous actor to do it. And Tom was like, well, why don't you guys ever ask me to do this stuff? And
that's awesome.
And he was like, well, okay. So that's how it happened. Mm. Just over dinner.
That's nice. How it happens. That's how it happens.
Tom Hanks is a really attractive woman at the bar that everyone's afraid to ask out. Who, when you ask out, will go out with you, most likely.
Right. I always tell you, Marty, I always say this at work. I was like, you don't know until you ask.
Right.
Right.
He does say that
all the time.
I confirm that. Where someone like me is like, oh, I don't want to bother.
Listen, it was delightful.
I thought two things. I thought 30 seconds in, I was like, okay, I get it. Because what I was initially thinking was, please make this music stop. I had a bit of that because I hate pop music.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying it's bad. I'm not saying you shouldn't listen. I hate it, and I want it to stop. And then after a little bit, I stopped listening to the music, and I just watched Hanks, and I was like, this is okay. And then I thought, you're really kind of underselling the music with him here. Like it's two completely different audiences, I feel like. Like, but you're either watching for Hanks or you're listening for music. And if you watch one, you might not want the other. I don't know, though.
This is Christopher Walken in a Fatboy Slim video.
Different time.
It still is. No, I think Christopher Walken
was a college boy hipster thing.
That video blew up in mainstream. That video blew up and went mainstream.
Yeah. That video would arguably made Fatboy Slim a mainstream, for however brief it was.
Whatever, I couldn't pick Fatboy Slim out of it. I don't even know if it's a person.
You didn't anyway. Actually, fun trivia fact about Fatboy Slim: he was the bassist in the Britpop band The House Martins in the 80s.
So Fatboy Slim is a he.
Yep.
Not a them.
It's one guy.
It's a guy. Yeah, it's one guy.
Okay.
He's in the other video that got that popular.
I don't.
He's in that one.
It's fine.
If you look at the comments on YouTube, like, it's all people
very
excited about Tom Hanks being in a Carly Rae Jepsen video. So I don't know.
You know what? I don't even know. I can't even speak to it. I don't know.
Tom Hanks' love is universal, Josh. Everyone knows that. He's a GDET. He's the ERGDET. He's the chairman of the GDET board.
Yep.
All right.
Fascinating. I feel enlightened. I didn't know that existed. So that's
great. I didn't either. When I saw the email come in, I was like, what is this? What? And then
who wrote that to us again?
Gavin T.
I really like you, Gavin T.
Thanks to Gavin, David, and Andrew, even if David needs to get an Atlas. Atlas is still a thing?
I mean, citizenship roles, something. Just look at IMDb.
So there you go. You can write us in at contact@ifanboy.com if you want to get an email on the show. We like doing these emails on the media split.
So if you're going to write to us and say that Ryan Reynolds should be a GDAT, I need you to check yourself right now. I just can't have it.
All right, so this, as we mentioned, this is the last.
What did I tell you?
When I read that letter, you would slow crank the camera, and I took a drag on my cigarette.
Yep, exactly.
Like the bar with De Niro.
And by the way, Christmas time.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Well, winter.
No, it was Christmas. The whole thing happened at the Christmas party, and then after the Christmas party, the whole Lufthansa thing happened in December, and then
we did a whole show on this movie
that takes place at Christmas time. That breaks your rule.
Yeah. Well, no, it takes place at Christmas time, right?
It's not a Christmas movie,
but it is a movie I'll watch during Christmas because I have the time. But it is not a Christmas movie, even though Karen, he got the biggest one they had.
That's it. That takes place at a different time than the Christmas party, though. Because,
well, Christmas party is still a Christmas time.
Oh my god!
No! I mean, that scene, like, there's at least two different Christmases.
There's one Christmas.
So he gets the tree and the new place.
They do the Lufthansa heist. He gets all that money.
Yeah, that's why he's got the big tree, because he got the Lufthansa money.
He gets the big tree.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
So what happens is they do the Lufthansa heist. They have the Christmas party. He gets handed his cut, and he goes, "Don't go make any big purchases." And then the next shot is, "I got the biggest one they had."
All right.
And then he goes, "Happy Hanukkah."
And then they kill Stax.
Yeah,
buying a Christmas tree is not like gonna trigger a red flag like buying a pink Cadillac is.
Right, but it's in her mother's name.
But still, the tree. They only buy the trees in their mom's names.
Which is, the mom is Jewish, so that's definitely
I love that.
A red flag right there. The FBI is going to see that.
I love that.
Actually, 1960, the FBI wasn't on them.
All right, so as we mentioned at the top of the show, this is our
78.
last media.
That was 78.
Oh my God! We have to end the show.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm a little out of practice with that.
Do you not remember the year of our life spent analyzing that movie minute by minute?
It's possible that doing that knocked it out of my head.
78, man. Come on.
Really? For some reason, I was thinking that was that makes sense. That's fine. I agree. I'm not arguing with you. I just forgot.
My favorite part of the Lufthansa heist scene and all that is when he's in the shower and he hears about it on the radio.
10-10 wins.
I was right there with you. Because when he says it, I'm going to say when he slaps the wall and the shot's going down.
It's not so much when he slaps the wall, and Connor will know this. It's the true to New York news bulletin xylophone music. You know,
Ten wins.
$6 million, $5 million, $7 million. No one really knows how much was stolen from.
I used to, Lindsay and I used to always say a joke when that came on in the car. would be the one guy with his finger doing the music. Like, and there would be a guy who was doing that live in the studio every time.
December 11th. That's an airplane joke. That's a Zucker Brothers joke. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it is, but that it is, you know, like the camera pans and there's a guy in front of the xylophone doing it. Yeah.
There's a Python. The cheese shop sketch is that as he's getting madder that there's no cheese, and you hear this music that you kind of forget about. And then at one point he turns around and screams at this little mariachi band, "Will you knock it off?" They're like, "Oh," and non-diegetic music sounds jokes are my
on
favorite.
That topic. Where, I
oh
forget,
my
where
god,
you, we're caught. Here we go. We got him.
Where do you guys net out on the use of the Imperial March and solo? Was that good or bad?
I don't remember.
I knocked all of that movie out of my brain.
When he goes to,
you probably watch on Disney Plus.
When he goes to when he goes to sign up for the Imperial Navy at the recruitment station, they're playing the Imperial March.
No, that's terrible.
Right, it's horrible.
Everything
about that scene is terrible.
Yes, yeah.
That happened.
Wow. I don't remember that. I mean, all I remember from that is that when he got his name, and I thought that's the worst thing. Because the fact that he had been in the Imperial Navy, was it?
Yeah.
That's fascinating. They should have just played that straight. It's really
just on its own. He was.
That was in his backstory in the books. The non-licensed. Yeah. That was his thing.
No, I know, but but they made it all gaggy instead, and I don't like that.
Yeah. Lufthansa was December 11, 1978.
It's pretty much 1979.
Well, yeah, but
I was around for that.
And it's right before. Yeah, mayor. You were 1 year old.
No,
yeah.
But I was
He was in the airport. He was at Idlewild.
I was
Kennedy. It's called Kennedy at that time.
That's true.
I have an alibi. I have nothing to do with it.
What do you think is the? Well, they know who did this. I mean, they know who. Well, no, they don't know who do it. They know who they think did it.
You know what's great about this is I can just hit the stop record button, and that show will be over.
I was going to say, what is a greater mystery, the Lufthansa heist or Zodiac?
Who was the head of the? I'm pretty sure Zodiac.
Zodiac.
Yeah, me too.
Who's the head of Lucchese's at that point?
I think Lucchese.
No, Lucchese was long gone.
Let's see, Lucchese crime family.
It was Johnny Roast Beef.
Historical leadership. So 78 would have been, Tony Dux.
Tony Dux. Karachi.
Anthony Carallo. Carallo. Yeah.
So. That's right, because that would have been Paul Verhoeven. Okay, go on. Yeah. Why don't we end the show?
All right.
Let's do that. I mean, that was the most we've gone off the rails in years.
Oh, but it was fun. It was great. Yeah, I needed that.
Like we said, this is our last Media Explode of the year, so we'll be back into January for another episode of Media Explode. But in December, you'll have the All Media Year in Spectacular, which is our triple sized edition of this show, in which we talk about, well, we got to figure that out. But the TV and the music and all the stuff we liked that wasn't comics related, it also wasn't movies because there were no movies.
Well, we got to make picks now, we got to really narrow it down.
So you can look for that December. You can, of course, listen to our weekly Pick of the Week show, which Josh and I talk about the week's comics. You can listen to the bi-monthly Talksplode and Booksplode show. You can listen to Ron on All About Android. And we'll be back next year with another edition of Media Explode. Thanks for listening. I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
I'm Josh.
Take it back.
I don't care where you got it. I don't care what you do. Take it back.
God, I love that movie.
What are you
so
stupid?
Much. It might be time to. I haven't watched it in ages because
I watched it a couple of months ago.
So good.
What are you stupid? And then last year we saw it in the theater around this time, which was fantastic.
Yeah.
What are you stupid? What's the matter with you? What's the matter with you?
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.